first, thanks a lot to the organizers. I've never been to Toronto before, and it's a very beautiful place. You know immediately when you step foot outside of your bed and breakfast that you're in a different kind of city, because you get on this subway system that works beautifully. Everybody's friendly. They're in amazing restaurants. You know immediately as soon as you step foot inside this this institute that you're also in a different country, right? I mean, if this were an institute in the United States, when you went to hang up your coat, you wouldn't be able to pick up your hanger because people steal their hangers, right? But here, you can just they let you take the hangers. And so I'm actually a little short on hangers, so I'm going to put that back in there. Right, so on the one hand, it's a different country, right? On the other hand, I'm from Minnesota, so I come here, I see all this great food, I see these very friendly people, and I think this is very foreign. But they talk just like we do in Minnesota. So in one sense, it's a very familiar place. That's the first thing I want to say about Minnesota. Finally getting to the talk. The second thing I want to say about Minnesota is, besides talking about how great they have it up in Canada, something we do a lot of in Minnesota is we talk about famous people from Minnesota. And here's one of the most famous people from Minnesota. That's Bob Dylan. Okay, so I need to say something that Bob Dylan said to sort of set the tone of this talk. He said, sometimes it's not enough to know the meaning of things. Sometimes we have to know what things don't mean as well. Okay, so this talk is going to be about the nonlinear Schrodinger equation, but there won't be a potential like there was in some talks yesterday. There'll just be one. He'll be here Friday. Okay, yeah. Yeah. There won't be a potential like there was in some talks last week. Ken, in his talk, beautiful talk, he talked about how the goal was to get very detailed information on the asymptotics of the solution. The goal of this talk is just going to be well-posedness globally in time. And also scattering, that at time equals infinity, it looks like the linear solution. So compared to the goals of his talk, the goals here are very modest. Also, we're going to be working on R3. Professor Burke yesterday was working on manifolds. So in that sense, this is a lot more preliminary result. The other thing I want to say about what things don't mean is we're going to be using the Fourier transform a lot. But we're going to just be using basics of the Fourier transform. So for example, here are some facts that we'll use. This is just baby stuff. If I take the projection onto frequencies about n on f, and I measure it in L2, and I put a derivative, that's about the same size as n times the projection onto frequencies about n, f in L2. A derivative costs you a factor of n. Another thing I want to say is that if you have projections onto frequencies smaller than n of f in L2, that derivative only costs you the highest frequency that's lying around, right? That's bounded by n. Another way of saying that is that if you have a certain amount of L2 mass that's living at very low frequencies, then it's going to have small energy. Right? Nothing fancy here. And the last thing I want to say is that if you have a certain amount of energy living at high frequencies, so I want to bound the L2 norm of the projection onto frequencies bigger than n of f. So think f lives at high frequencies. I'm going to pay a derivative. That derivative always gives me at least a power of an n coming out. So I put an n to the minus 1. When you look at that line, you should think, if you have a certain amount of energy at high frequencies, so this is like 1, then the L2 norm of that function is very small. Okay? I'm telling you what things don't mean. This is all I'm really going to use, okay, about the Fourier transform. Okay, so everything I say is joint with Jim Colyander, Giuliola Staffolani, Hideo Takeoka, and Terry Tao. And it's about this problem. So it's a nonlinear Schrodinger equation. And let's put a power p there first. U is a function of x and t, x in R3, t bigger than or equal to 0. And u of x0 is u0. It's in some s is bigger than equal to 1. And there are two things I want to say about that problem. First is that there are some conserved quantities. The L2 norm is conserved. So this is the L2 in space. This is the same as the L2 in space of the initial data. And there's also a conserved energy. Looks like an integral, 1/2 and that's going to be the same thing as the energy at time 0. Okay. And the second thing I want to say is that there's a scaling. So if you solve the problem, then so does the following guy. I'm going to have some scaling parameter U lambda, and it's going to be lambda to a mysterious power, U of x over lambda, t over lambda squared. And to figure out the mysterious power, you just use the equation. On the right-hand side, I have lambda to the mp, and on the left-hand side, I have lambda to the m minus 2. So m is equal to minus 2 over p minus 1. And you plug that back into the energy. And you see that the energy, and let's think that lambda is big. The energy of U lambda, let's talk about the initial data, is lambda to the, what happens? Let's just look at this term because the two terms scale the same. I square it, so I get minus 4 over p minus 1. I differentiate it and square that, so I get a minus 2. Then I got to change variables to get back to something that looks like the energy of U. So when I change variables, I get plus 3. And when you look at that 4 over p minus 1 plus 1, this thing is equal to 0 when p is equal to 5. It's less than 0 when p is less than 5, and it's bigger than 0 when p is bigger than 5. Okay, so we split the problem up into three cases. P less than 5, we're going to call it subcritical. P equals to 5, we'll call critical. And p bigger than 5, we'll call supercritical. This is all with respect to the scaling of the energy. The point is that you can think of the energy in this sort of problem as being small. And here, you don't change the energy. And here, you change it, but in the wrong direction. Okay. So roughly speaking, and this came up a lot yesterday in Nikolai's talk, for the very modest statements that we want to talk about today, things like global existence and uniqueness and scattering, lots is known here. I'm going to talk about a result here. And here you don't expect to get global existence and scattering. You don't have global well poles in this. So let me say what's known. From the point of view of these global well poles in this thing. So, okay, p less than 5. Now, this is all going to be in dimension 3. Let's take S equal to 1. And there's a unique solution to star in continuous 0 infinity, HS of R3. And there's scattering. If someone wanted to read about that, I would send them to a paper by Geniber and Velo. In 85, or Kazanov and Weissler, 89. Actually, as long as you can get a solution that's as smooth as the inhomogeneity allows you. Okay, so I'm going to put S bigger than or equal to 1. But if you don't have a smooth inhomogeneity, be careful about how high S is. Okay, P is equal to 5. So now we have a smooth nonlinearity, and I want to distinguish between two cases. The first case says that there's a time, it depends on the initial data, and there's a unique solution to the problem on, in continuous zero t. It doesn't matter if I make that closed or not. HF. Okay? And the point is that this thing depends on more than the norm of the initial data in H1. Okay? Or HF. And the second thing I want to say about the t equals 5 case is that for small data, everything's great. If the data in H1 is much smaller than 1, you can take t equals infinity here. And again, if you wanted to read about that, I would send you to Ginebra and Velo, 85. Or Kazanov-Weisler, 89. Okay. So the question today is, what about large data? Okay. So there's a theorem in the radial case. So we're going to take u0 of x is radial. So the solution is 2. We're in dimension 3. And the conclusion is that there's an M and a solution. So there exists a unique solution to star in 0 infinity. HS of Rn with the integral from 0 up to infinity, the integral over R3, norm of U10 dx dt, bounded by some constant that depends on the energy of the initial data. Okay? So we're going to reproduce this small data discussion, okay? So when we do that, you'll see why this L10, this is a scale invariant norm, why that's important. Okay? So as soon as you have that, we won't talk about this, but as soon as you have that, you also get scattering. Okay, so what do I mean by that? I mean that there's another guy, another piece of initial data in HS of R3, so that if I look at the linear evolution of that data and I compare it to the nonlinear evolution at time t in HS, that goes to 0 as t goes to infinity. Okay. So in particular, I know that the sup in t of the solution in HS is bounded by a constant depending just on this magical number. Let's call this M. Times the initial data in HS. Okay. Okay, so that was in 99. That's a radial result. In 2000, Grilakis proved something similar. It's a weaker result. It shows that there are global smooth solutions from radial data. Okay, but it's a different proof, so there are new ideas in there too. So Grilakis 2000, also radial. So you get global smooth solutions. There's no scattering statement there. And the theorem I'm going to talk about today is joint with Jim, Giliola, Hideo, and Terry, C-K-S-T-T. So we're going to take U0 in HS, R3, S bigger than or equal to 1. So there's no radial assumption. And we get the same conclusions as Bergin. So let me try and give some idea of the proof. So roughly what we're going to do is, I need to talk about this L10 norm. So I'm going to reproduce this stuff about small data. And then we'll talk about the proof. When we talk about the proof, you'll see that there are lots of ideas here that aren't new. Lots of ideas here that were in Bergan 99 and Grilakis 2000. But also, there's some ideas that are in there and that are also be on the board today that come from the wave equation problem. So if you look at box phi equals phi fourth times phi, so this is the critical problem for the wave equation in three dimensions. Okay. Theta in HF is bigger than or equal to 1. You get global regularity and scattering. And the ideas that are getting used from here are... say again? My box looks like this, sorry. Yeah, so this is the defocusing one, right. So this was Grilakis, there's a proof in 90, 92. Shatash-Druva for finite energy, Kapitansky for finite energy, Bahuri-Shatah, and Bahuri-Girard for the scattering statements. Okay, so a lot of that, the ideas there got incorporated in this critical discussion for the nonlinear Schrodinger equation. Okay, so let's talk about small energy. So I have to talk about Stuttgart estimates. And they say the following, that if I have a pair of exponents, actually two pairs, let's call them admissible, where admissible means they lie on this line. That's 2, that's 1/6. One-half, then I can estimate the solution of the linear problem on any interval in terms of the function in L2 at time 0 plus the inhomogeneity also on that interval. And I can put derivatives here. Then I should put derivatives here. I should put derivatives here. Okay? Primes, thanks. Otherwise, then scale. Thanks. Okay, so what are we going to do here? I want to get control of, let's call Sk. So here's notation. I want to talk about all Sobolev norms with k derivative up to time t. It's the soup over q and r admissible norm of k derivatives of u, lqt, lrx, 0t. And what I want to do is control S1T. So there are some, I'm only going to really use a few norms here, okay? Here I'm going to be using things like 10/3 in X and T, or U and L 10 in X and T. Okay, they're admissible over here. That, because you just check it's on the line, I get to put one derivative there. So let's talk about one derivative, because I'm eventually going to be working in the energy class. I'm going to be looking at norms like this on the left-hand side, or that guy, which is by Sobolev, bounded by U, L, 10, T, L, 30, 13ths, X, with a derivative. Good. And now that guy is one of these guys. So this is allowed to be estimated. Okay, the L10 norm. And on the right-hand side, I'm going to look at things like the dual. So this is where your remark helps me a lot. The dual to this norm, L10 sevenths. Or maybe we'll look at every once in a while at the dual to the endpoint, which is L2t, L6 fifths x. Okay, so here we go. Let's estimate all Sobolev norms with one derivative lying around. Okay, that's bounded by the initial data. So U0, which U0 and H1, plus I put a derivative on the nonlinearity, and I put it in 10 sevenths. Okay? 0t cross R3. Okay? So that's just the Stuttgart's estimate with one derivative around. So what does this guy look like? He looks like a Nabla U and four more U's. I'm going to take each one of those guys in L10, xt. I'm going to take that guy in L10 thirds, xt. So that guy's bounded by norm U H dot 1 plus there are constants floating around. Plus I have U L 10 XT to the fourth, Nabla U L 10 thirds XT. Okay. But hey, this is one of those things that's part of S dot 1, right? So keep going. Okay, that's bounded by the initial data in H1 plus four L10 norms. Sorry, I should be putting this interval all the time. Times S dot 1 of T. Okay, so look, if this thing were really small, I could swing this thing over to the left-hand side and I would have a bound on S dot 1 in terms of the initial energy. If this thing were finite on an interval, I could chop it up into subintervals where it's really small and do the same argument on each of those subintervals. So I've just given you the rather unimpressive statement that if, and let's give this a name, if the integral of U in L10 xt on some interval, 0t, is, let's give that the name M, right? I'm changing powers on you, I'm sorry. If that's less than infinity, then I get to say that S dot 1 of T is bounded by some constant depending on M times the initial energy. Okay. And that's not so impressive. But the point is you can fiddle with this argument in three different ways. Okay. So I don't have time to fiddle with all the details, but let me first say that everything I said applies for higher derivatives. Okay? So if you have an interval, so this was true for all t in this interval where you have, well, that's enough. No, it's big. But what you do is you chop it, you chop up the interval. As long as you know it's finite, you can constant. No. So that's not constant. It's set, thanks. This won't mean constant times m. It'll mean some constant. I need, there's a universal constant so that if my L10 norm is less than that universal constant, just depends on m, right? It'll be exponential, but it just depends on m. I need to chop it up into a number of pieces. Okay. So let me fiddle with the notation on you. If I have an interval I, where this thing's true, then this is true for all t and I. Okay, so we fiddle with that, and we say that if we have two stars, then as long as we're more regular, I can move. I can get a bound like this also. If I happen to have a smoother solution, okay, than an energy one. So if you control L10 on an interval, you control everything that you reasonably could hope to control. Okay? The second one is that it applies to differences. So you use this argument to build a solution in continuous 0t HF. Sorry, let's talk about building a finite energy solution where t depends on u0. What you do is you pick a t so that e to the it Laplace, so that the linear evolution is small in all the Sobolev norms. In all the Stricarts norms. So, for example, it would be enough to have, by interpolation, the endpoint one small. Okay? So that's how you build a solution in H1. Okay? And the other thing I want to say is it's a continuation principle. If you have a solution on an interval for which the L10 norm is small, for which the L10 norm is finite, then you chop up that interval into pieces where the L10 norm is small. On each of those intervals, there's no big difference between the nonlinear evolution and the linear evolution. Okay? So you know that the nonlinear evolution isn't blowing up an L10, so you know that the linear evolution is getting small, so you can control. You can go past the time t. It's a continuation principle. Two stars, then time t for all t in the interval, in the closure of the interval. Okay, and the last thing I want to say is what I promised to say at the beginning is small data. If you happen to know that u0 h1 is much smaller than 1, then I go one step further and I say, well, this was also part of s1. So I have s1 to the fifth on the right-hand side. And I have s1 of t bounded by some epsilon plus s1 of t to the fifth. And now that's a bootstrap immediately because s1 of 0 is 0. And you get control up to t equals infinity. So everything I said now applies for t equal to infinity. Okay? So that's the small data result. Okay. Okay. Now let me talk about one other way to push this. So you can push this argument more. And you get the following lemma. So this is a perturbation argument. So here we have the energy space. Let's call it H1. Okay? And I look at some function sitting there, some data. So I have a U0 twiddle. Let me put this all on one board. It's kind of important. So I have a U0 twiddle with finite energy. And let's assume that the solution, L10, with that initial data on some interval I in L10 has the name M and it's less than infinity, where I dt plus Laplacian so it's a solution of star. So now what we're going to say is that then you can perturb this initial data and get bounds. Okay? I can find some epsilon. So there's an epsilon. It depends just on the energy of U twiddle and M. So that if I have another initial data, up here, so that if the energy of U twiddle minus U is bounded by epsilon, then I get a similar bound as this for U0, the evolution of U0. So under our nonlinear problem, satisfies norm of U twiddle minus U, L10, XT. It's going to be bounded by constant depending on M and the energy. Okay, so you should think of I as zero infinity here. Okay, so if you have a solution U twiddle, you can perturb it a little bit, and your new guy will also be global. It'll also be fine. You can actually fiddle with this a little bit. This U twiddle doesn't have to be a solution of the nonlinear problem. You can put an error here. And if you have bounds on the error in, let's say, L2t, L6/5 x, then the same conclusion holds. Okay? Okay. And I think that's all I want to say about the small data theory. Okay. So now you see the strategy, and this is the same strategy that Bergand did. So we're following his same outline, his same approach, and that's induction on energy. So I know that I'm okay for small data. Right? So I use this perturbation argument to perturb everybody and try to make this bigger and bigger and bigger. But the problem is that this constant could be going to infinity as my energy goes out to some critical energy. Okay. So let's write that down. The dilemma. There's an E crit. So that if the energy of U0 is E crit minus eta for some eta bigger than 0, then I have bounds. Some big constant, and it goes to infinity as eta goes to 0. Okay. And what we want to show is that E crit is equal to infinity. All right. So let me put something up here now. So we're going to look at a very specific sort of solution. It's called the enemy. Without loss of generality, our energy is equal to the critical energy. And we're on some interval looking at a solution U on an interval I with critical energy and the L10 norm on I cross R3 is equal to infinity. And that's the enemy as far as we know right now. And the strategy is we want to show that that guy doesn't exist, right? So the strategy of the proof and the outline of the rest of the talk I need a number about. Sorry? 8 minutes, all right. So first of all, study where the enemy lives. Two, study the enemy's weaknesses. And then you crush the enemy. Okay, so I'm going to obviously just have time for heuristics about this, but when's the last time you heard an American give you anything that was at all cohesive about how they fight the enemy? Right? So this won't be surprising to you. All right, study where the enemy lives. It actually is localized. In frequency space and spatial space. But when I say study the enemy's weaknesses, that means you prove A, and this is a non-perturbative argument, decay estimate, and where you finally get a contradiction is in an almost conservation law. For localized L2 mass. Okay. So let me just say this very quickly, okay? Where the enemy lives. The first thing I want to claim is that it has to be frequency localized. For all T, there's a frequency. So that if you give me an eta, there's a little constant and a big constant with two statements now. If I look at that part of the solution at time t in h dot 1 that lives below the little constant times n of t, that's small in energy. And if I look at that part of the solution, that's bigger than C of eta, that's small. So what I'm saying is that for all time, there's some number, n of t, so that most of the energy lives in some window around that at all time. Okay? That's not too surprising. Let me wave my hands about why that's true. If it weren't true, if the solution lived at two different frequencies, instead of using Stuttgart's estimates in that small energy argument, you would use estimates that say when you have parts of a solution that live at different frequencies, they don't really interact that much. These are the bilinear Stuttgart's estimates that Burke talked about yesterday. And you would get a gain, and by the induction argument, you would be okay. So because we're right at the, this is for our solution. This is a statement about the enemy. Okay? Okay. I'm not going to say anything about the spatial localization, but it has to be spatially localized also. What's the non-perturbative decay estimate? If you use the enemy, then, well, let me start with a more general statement. If you solve the problem, then we have an L4 bound. Okay, we have it for the solution on the interval I. The data in L2 times the data in H dot 1. Okay, so that's... Okay. So what we want to say is that that gives us a bound on the L10 norm on this interval, just depending on the energy. But that can't possibly be right, because you don't know if I'm using U or U lambda here, right? I mean, if I ended up with an estimate like this, you could come and you could replace U with U lambda. Nothing here scales, but this thing scales like lambda cubed. So this really doesn't give you any control on U under scaling. And the problem is that when you scale, when you replace U with U lambda, what you're doing is you're pushing frequency, you're pushing energy to low frequencies. Just look at the definition of U lambda. Okay? So the strategy is forget estimating low frequencies. Okay? I'm not going to estimate low frequencies. I'm going to cut this thing off to frequencies bigger than some n star. Okay? And I'm going to pretend now that that's a solution to the nonlinear problem. So I could put P bigger than or equal to n star here, and P bigger than or equal to n star, but that's bounded by H1. Okay. Now I want to get rid of that L2 norm. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pay some derivatives here. I'm going to pay a derivative. That's cubed. And I put an n star to the minus 3 here, because that derivative always costs at least, or contributes at least n star. So put an n star to the minus 3. This is true if this localized thing is a solution to the nonlinear problem. Okay. And actually, if not, so this is a statement only about the enemy. And it's a true statement, and it's a recent result. So this is... I don't need these intermediate steps now. So this is n star to minus 3 times a constant depending on the energy of U. And n star has to be small. In fact, what I should say is n star is less than, let's say, epsilon times n min, where that's the smallest frequency that shows up in this n of t. Okay, so if U is... is the enemy, and the statement is that there are two numbers, epsilon 1, epsilon 2, so that if n star is less than that, then I can actually make this right-hand side small, too. Okay, and that's the estimate. Let me just take one more minute to say how you finally get the contradiction. If n of t is bounded, we're done. Because then we have an L4 bound, and if you have bounded frequencies, L4 controls L10, roughly speaking. And we wanted to control L10. Okay, so now n of t goes to infinity. Okay. So I'm going to need some parameters here. N0, N1, N2. Constants. That constant is going to be much bigger than that constant and that constant. I need big constants. That's okay. And then I need to draw two things. I'm going to record energy. So what is it? I have time, some time t here, let's say, when my n is the smallest. So let's say n min. I can scale things so that the smallest n of t is 1. And let me draw it here. So red means hot. Red is where I'm going to record where energy lives. And blue means cold. That's where the L2 norm lives. Okay. So at this time, I have energy, at least 1, living in between some big constant that depends on A to 0 and some little constant that depends on A to 0. Okay? And I know that at some time t later, let's call it t blow up, this n of t goes to infinity. Okay? So I can take this 1 over A to 2, so that's huge. And I know that down in here, I have less than or equal to A to 2 energy. If n of t is less than infinity, I'm done. So now I'm talking about what happens when n of t goes to infinity. So n of t screams out here. Okay, and I have energy out here. Well, how much L2 norm is here? I make L2 smallest by putting all of that energy at high frequencies. Well, I can only get it up to c of a to 0. So this is bigger than or equal to some little c of a to 0. And what I want to say is, what if I could show that, let's put an A to 1 here, then I'm done. What if I could show that this L2 norm doesn't all sneak below this threshold A to 1? If I show that at time t blow, the L2 norm is bigger than or equal to C of A to 0 over 2. What can you say about the energy then? Okay, that L2 norm, that's the part of L2 bigger than A to 1 of U. That stuff can't live super high because then it would contradict the fact that I have about 1 amount of energy. So that's got to live less than C of A to 0. Okay? So how much energy would that have? That would have energy, well, the way you'd make that energy smallest is to stick it all the way down at A to 1. That would be this much L2 norm times the weight coming in of A to 1. That would have C of A to 0, A to 1 energy. Okay? But that's bigger than A to 2. And I was assuming that I didn't have that. So the statement is that if N of t goes to infinity, you can have conservation of energy, you can have conservation of L2, but you can't have both if you can prove something like this. Okay? If you can show that the L2 mass localized in frequency doesn't drop away. So you got to show that, and you do that with this estimate. And I'll stop there.